Get ready, get comfy for the next Nonprofit Insider Podcast episode.
All right, everyone, we're back with another episode of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. I talk about mega guests a lot here on the podcast because all of our guests are mega guests. But once you start going international, once you start going across the pond or across some borders, people start knowing your name in different countries. That's how you know we're legit. I am so excited about this episode. Real fast, before our amazing guest introduces themselves, be sure to go to our Instagram page, the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. I've got all the links in the show notes. You know all that. I think we're really close to hitting 500 followers, which is very, very big for me as a former non-Instagrammer. I started this Instagram actually for the first time because of this podcast. So I got a lot of catching up to do. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on TikTok. You know the drill, you know the drill. And be sure to like and subscribe. And most importantly, rate the podcast. As much as I like all the others, I love it when people give me a nice rating. So that's always appreciated. All right, listen. I told you when we go international, we're big. B-I-G. I'm going international for the second time around. I'm joined with Jessica Pang Parks. Jessica, this is such an exciting day to have you here. We've been talking for some time. Let you introduce yourself. I can't even do it justice. Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Slim. So yes, I am from across the border, your neighbor to the north. I'm here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And let me tell you a little bit about what I do. So nonprofits, you know them. This is what you talk about on the Nonprofit Insider Podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Nonprofits work so hard to build supporter trust, but many of them lose it by overlooking the influence that volunteers have. So that's why nonprofits who give a care call me when they're ready to create impact and inspire belonging through ethical volunteer engagement frameworks. And I know that's what we're going to be talking about today, ethical volunteer engagement. And the result, when you got that, when you work with me, genuine community buy-in, deeper connections to your nonprofit's mission, and more fundraising revenue.
Now, wait a minute. Hang on now. You're speaking the language. Once you start talking revenue, it's ironic because people start really listening to that. Not that they weren't listening before. But we know how it is out here. And so, yes, I'm excited to have you here, Jessica. This is such a pleasure. We're going to tell all the people how they can connect and find you and all that stuff. That's all going to be in the show notes. But look, I want to get into this because we're going to talk a fair amount today about the volunteer side of the nonprofit, including volunteer engagement. So I really want to start with this. Give me a State of the Union style address of the nonprofit space. You know, listen, I know you just had your prime minister just step in. Justin Trudeau, he's out of there. But look, from your point of view as a leader in the volunteer space, from your many years of experience, is the volunteer side of the nonprofit world, is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Is it stagnant? You know, lay the framework for us when it comes to volunteerism or volunteer management.
Okay, so in Canada, our State of the Union address is actually called the throne speech because technically we're still part of the Commonwealth and, you know, the monarch in England is our monarch.
Yes.
But yeah, oof, that's like a really tough question that you're asking me right off the bat. And I absolutely love it. Like most other things in nonprofit and, you know, politics in any country, mm-hmm. volunteer engagement's got its ups and downs. So let me tell you about the bad stuff that's happened over the last decade or so. Do you remember this thing called the COVID-19 pandemic?
Never heard of it.
So it's almost 5 years ago.
Yeah, when it entered COVID. The lexicon.
Uh-huh. Right? So before COVID-19 happened, many volunteers who were in the nonprofit space, giving their time, they were older people. they supported the same organizations for many years, right? And their contributions were almost seen as like a given, which meant the organizations that worked with these volunteers, they appreciated them. They would say things like, oh, we couldn't do it without you. You're the heart of what we do, right? But the work of managing the strategy of volunteer engagement, the volunteer engagement cycle from planning to recruitment to orientation and training to supervision and support mm-hmm. to recognition, all centered on stewarding these people who are giving their only non-renewable resource, that was undervalued by nonprofits. Organizations in general, I'm just generalizing here, but they didn't feel like they needed to invest in volunteer engagement because volunteers would just keep showing up, right? Like, oh, you'd see, you know, stereotypically older white ladies coming in week after week to do their shifts, right? Mm-hmm. We saw them in the community centers, the hospitals, the after-school programs, right? You know, those of us who've been around the landscape, that's what we saw.
Oh, we know it.
Yeah. So March 2020 happened. Many leaders of volunteers, including myself, doing that work, were laid off or furloughed or asked to put their time towards other priorities. Because at that moment, nonprofits didn't really know how to engage volunteers, right? Like, oh, we have these people coming in, we have them serving the community, they're interacting with people. Oh, but there's this disease, there's fear, right? There were no vaccines.
Of course, right.
So those volunteers, especially the older ones, they were told their positions were put on hold. And because the people who were stewarding them, they were deployed somewhere else or no longer working at the organization, no one would check in with them and thank them for being part of the community. However, nonprofits were also freaking out because revenue's declining. Ah, so we're just going to send mail and email and phone calls and ask. Does that sound familiar?
You're taking me back. I feel like I'm in a time machine.
Yeah. So when those organizations were ready to re-engage volunteers, right? Let's say, you know, latter part of 2021 into 2022, they didn't get much of a response. They were like, oh yeah, all these people are just going to come back and it's going to be exactly like it was before. And they got crickets. So they're going around saying, and there's still some of them going around saying, no one wants to volunteer. Right? And that gave them a reason to keep the investment into volunteer engagement low or non-existent. So a lot of the folks I know who got laid off or furloughed around the same time I did, they were never hired back. Or they were hired back for a different role, and now volunteer engagement is a smaller part of their portfolio. Or their team, which used to be 5 or 6 people, is now maybe 1 or 2. So another thing that was happening, which is more on the positive side.
Okay.
So these larger organizations.
You're giving us the good, the bad, and the ugly here is what it's kind of sounding like.
I love talking good, bad, and ugly. And yes, I am. So these organizations, usually, you know, the stalwart organizations in your community, right? The big brand name nonprofits, the big hospitals in the area, the big foundations, all of those organizations. What they didn't see at the same time was in 2020, 2021, what was happening was there were a lot of grassroots and mutual aid efforts that were being organized by young people, Black and brown folks, and many people who never felt welcome in the traditional models of volunteering. So now these folks, they're volunteering in their own ways, right? They're helping their neighbors. They're delivering food to people who are not able to access it. They're, you know, delivering prescriptions potentially, right? They're cooking. They're helping one another out. And they're not even seeing it as volunteering sometimes. They just see it as being a good neighbor, right? And they're doing it in, you know, ways that work for them. It's a little bit less formal. It's more meaningful to them. And it's more flexible in terms of their time and how they want to give. So they're checking in on people. You know, they're advocating on social media. They're babysitting for nieces, nephews, grandkids, friends' kids, right? Delivering groceries. So in this sense, it's really gotten better. And I've seen this huge movement that hasn't been recognized as volunteering, but what it really is what my friend Brianna Dorialis, who runs Connecting the Cause, she would call it neighboring. People are just giving their time and talent to do the right thing. Now let's go back to volunteer engagement professionals. So where does that leave us, right? The people who were laid off, furloughed, and now we're like, what are we going to do? And I understand that not everybody's going to go off like me and become a consultant. I get that, right? Our profession over the last decade through COVID, it has advanced, albeit pretty slowly. We're getting more recognition as a necessity in the nonprofit sector. I see that, especially more where you live in the States. I see roles that are better paid, more fairly paid, have more appropriate levels of responsibilities, and are asking professionals to measure things that are not just focused on how many volunteers can you get in the door? How many hours can they donate? I think that's great. Now, going back to the bad and ugly, our professional associations are dying.
Wait, when you say our, what do you mean by when you say our professional associations? What do you mean?
So probably in 2016, 2017, I was the president of the professional association here in Toronto for leaders of volunteers. It was called TAVA. Okay. And we met once a month. There was, you know, usually a guest speaker. We would network with each other. It was great. At its peak, there were probably like almost 100 members. When I was there, it was like 50 members. In December 2024, I went to a funeral for this professional association. And this is in Canada's largest, most populous city, where most of our national charities are headquartered.
Okay.
So it's really sad. And why this professional association died was because, ironically, nobody could step up and volunteer. So you have a bunch of professionals whose job it is to work with volunteers, and nobody could have enough capacity to volunteer to run this association.
In Toronto. The fourth largest city in North America.
Yeah. Fourth largest city in North America. And I've seen this at other places across Canada, also in the States. So in the States, these would be called AVAs. Or DOVIAs. I've heard that many similar organizations, again, because of a lack of leadership, the organizations are dissolving and folding because there's just no capacity from the membership to serve.
Okay.
And, you know, I've really been thinking about why this is happening. So our professional associations, we rely on volunteer leadership. Most of these professional associations don't have staff, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a group of people who want to do good stuff, mm-hmm. help each other out. And the people who have been able to take on leadership positions in those associations, like myself, are incredibly privileged. We were usually the people who had full-time permanent jobs, living wages, maybe not as many family or caregiving responsibilities, right? So what I saw was that, once all those folks have cycled through being in a leadership position, you're out of capacity. And being someone who has that privilege, right, that economic privilege and has served in that way, I also feel like that's a challenge for a profession that is about caring and supporting others. Because what did I know about what it would be like to be someone who was always on contract roles, never knew if their contract would be renewed, right? What would I know about people who have to balance a volunteer engagement and program management portfolio? I've only ever had to do volunteer engagement. I could focus 100% of my time on that. I was never asked to do other things because the organizations that hired me had the capacity to invest in that, right? And I was at organizations who really supported me to take courses, take work time and work on the professional association leadership, attend conferences, and a lot of folks who work in volunteer engagement unfortunately don't have that. It's really hard. People get burnt out.
Well, wait a minute, hang on. Because I want to talk some more about the volunteer management space. Once again, I'm joined with Jessica Payne Parks, just an amazing all-around expert volunteer, leader, volunteer themselves. You've done a little bit of everything in the space. We're going to get some more insights here in a little bit. But I want to kind of focus a little bit more on volunteer management and the leaders that are in that space, because I know we have a lot of audience members, a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are like you and I, have really been in the volunteer space, have interacted with volunteers to one degree or another. And I want to read a recommendation that was given to you on your LinkedIn profile by from Meg Chambers, volunteer coordinator at Hamilton Health Services. She said, and I quote, "I had the pleasure of attending Jessica's self-advocacy workshop for volunteer leaders presented at the 2024 Volunteer Management Professionals of Canada Conference. Jessica did an incredible job addressing the unique challenges faced by volunteer leaders. It was both comprehensive and highly relevant," end quote. And they said some more things after that. Jessica, from your point of view as an expert in this field, what are some of the unique challenges faced by volunteer management leaders? And listen, we ain't got all day, so you got to give us the good stuff. What are like the top challenges that you see post-COVID these days?
Okay, I'm going to focus. I'm going to keep this
Because
tight.
we could talk about this for an hour.
Oh, 100%. So
Hey,
let's.
multiple responsibility. Did I ask you this question? You asked me.
Well, I think we already touched on this with my previous answer, right? Like low pay, like contract work, being burnt out, lack of opportunity, right? But let's start with who most leaders of volunteers are. The majority of us are women, like vast majority, like 80% plus. And I think anybody listening to this podcast or has stepped into a nonprofit, it's very woman-dominated space, woman majority space. And when you look specifically at volunteer engagement, it's very much a majority woman profession. Now, yes, it is 2025, but it's not a surprise to anybody that women still take on the majority of household and caregiving responsibilities. Right? I think, we're working hard to change that. I think I see you swim with your partner and your child, and I see that, compared to generations past, many of our peers in our generation are doing more, right?
Doing more.
Like there's a little bit more equal if it's a heterosexual partnership, it's a little bit more equal, okay? Now, but being in this caregiving space and the expectations that are placed on us because we happen to be women, right, contributes to burnout, even hesitancy, that imposter syndrome of stepping into or considering ourselves for leadership roles, right? And I've seen a lot of folks who work with volunteers, including myself, who have taken on additional work, but not asking for compensation or recognition for it. So let me kind of talk about, you know, the work itself, working with volunteers, leading volunteers. That's hard. And you know why? And this is like what I say to everyone when they ask me about working with volunteers. Volunteers are people and people are complicated.
Wait a minute, let me write that down.
Right? So volunteer engagement done well doesn't mean pleasing everyone. Right? It's not about making people happy. That's actually a misconception I had when I started doing volunteer engagement work. I was like, I'm just here to keep everyone happy. But that's actually like a really messed up mindset, because you're not here to make people feel good. You're here to align the organization's mission and values with the contributions that the volunteers are making, right?
Yeah.
And this leads to tough conversations. It means you have to be able to talk to people who may come from a different life experience, may be a lot more older than you, may have a lot more power than you outside of your organization, right? Mm-hmm. May not take you seriously. You have to talk to them about expectations. You have to talk to them about rights and responsibilities. And at the same time, you have colleagues across the sector, right? We need help with this. Can you help us by getting us volunteers to support? We need help with this. Can you help us? Can you get us a volunteer tomorrow? Can you get us a volunteer yesterday? It's also negotiating with your colleagues and educating them about how volunteer engagement works, right? I can't just pull a volunteer out of my desk drawer and send them to your golf tournament. That doesn't work. You have to build a relationship with them and give them boundaries about what they're supposed to do there and what they can't do and how they're expected to behave and how they're going to represent the organization, right? And there's a lot of managing those expectations, both with volunteers, with colleagues, with the public. That is very challenging work, but that's also the work that I love to do. So that's why I've done it for so long. And that's why I'm here talking to you and so excited about it.
Well, and that's a perfect transition, because you know, I know people listening to this know it's pretty common for people in the nonprofit space to have multiple roles, but it feels like it's extra common for volunteer managers to serve in multiple roles, whether officially or unofficially, right? Yeah. You know, I'll sometimes just go online, just look up jobs in the nonprofit space just to see what's happening. And you'll see a lot of, we're looking for an operation manager / volunteer manager.
Yeah.
We're looking for a finance director / volunteer manager. It's always this and volunteer manager. So I wanted to ask you a pretty straightforward question that might not even have a straightforward answer.
Yeah.
Are volunteer management leaders underappreciated in the sector as a whole?
100% yes. Now, like, let's go back to what you were saying about those job postings that you saw, right? How many of them started with volunteer manager and program support, right? No, volunteer engagement work is always tacked on the end as a, oh yeah, and you got to do this too, because, oh, we forgot to put it somewhere else. And now, oh shoot, someone's got to do it. I guess it's you.
You're
Right?
right.
And, my mentor, Aaron Spink, loves to say everyone thinks they can be a leader of volunteers because most people have volunteered. Right? But let me tell you something, Slim. I brushed my teeth this morning. Does that mean I'm a dentist? Maybe I can give you a root canal later.
It took me a second. I see what you did there. I see what you did there. No, I could not do that, even though I've brushed my teeth twice today already.
Right? So just you volunteered wherever it is, even if it was for 10 or 20 years, right? Doesn't mean you have the professional experience. And all that stuff I was talking about before with you about navigating the politics and just that experience of being in that role of representing the organization as a paid staff member, where what you do impacts your livelihood, right? And it's definitely not appreciated by the sector as a whole, definitely underappreciated. And, look, this is my experience. I call it the iron ceiling. So, my last nonprofit job with the nonprofit before I became a consultant was as the director of volunteer engagement and innovation. So I was a director reporting into a vice president of fundraising. I have yet to see a vice president of volunteer engagement role at any organization in Canada.
That's not
I've
possible.
seen one or two in the US. I've seen one or
That's
two.
not possible. What, really? And
Yeah,
you know
I
the
have
sector. You're
yet to
looking.
see it. I have yet to see it, but maybe they exist. Okay, so I worked my way into that director role by moving to different organizations. I'm a typical millennial, but once every 18 months, I got a new job. Okay. But most of those organizations I worked at and most of the roles that I saw when I was looking for a job didn't have a role to aspire to beyond the one that I was holding. So whether that was the volunteer coordinator at an entry level, or I was a senior specialist and then I was a senior manager, whatever that was it. The iron ceiling. And the managers that I reported to, they were not volunteer engagement leaders. They were fundraisers, marketers. Right? Sometimes I've seen volunteer engagement report into HR. And it is really hard when your boss doesn't really get what you do, and you have to educate your boss every single day as part of your work because they don't have the background that you have. So thankfully, I worked for some incredible leaders who trusted me. And we're there to receive that education. But that was still extra work that we both had to put in. Right? So based on my experience, I think nonprofits need to recognize that volunteer engagement is more than HR for people who aren't paid, or fundraising for people who give time instead of money. Or just another subsegment to market to,
It's its
right?
own thing.
It's its own
It does
thing.
its own thing.
And it's time for these organizations to truly consider how volunteers contribute to multiple teams across the organization. Every organization I worked at, I worked with the finance team, I worked with the programs team, I worked with the operations team, every single team. And volunteers can support every single team. It's harder in a unionized environment, but Every single team. Volunteers can support by contributing their time and their talent, but also to awareness and revenue through their testimony, so sharing their stories and building their networks and bringing in their ties, right? And that is what leads to that revenue generation that I think organizations are so obsessed with. Because yes, we do need to keep the lights on. Yes, we do need to keep the bills paid. But if you lose that trust with the people who are giving you their only non-renewable resource, you don't have anything left.
This is exactly what I was hoping we would get into. And I didn't waste any time. I just hit you off with some questions back to back to back, three in a row. So here's what I'm going to do. I want to take a quick break. You know, we got to feed our sponsors. It's probably just myself, if I'm being honest. But we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back because I want to learn a little bit more about you, Jessica, who you are, how you got to this point, and then go from there.
Awesome. See you soon.
Hey, you got something in the oven, and you have something in the stove, and you have laundry in the washer and the dryer, and you got to pick up the kids, and you got to do everything, if we're being honest. And that's one of the great things about a podcast. You can plug it in, put on the AirPods, put on the headphones, and do things at the same time. You're liking the stuff Jessica's telling you, right? Yeah, you're in the nonprofit space. You know how important volunteers are to the mission and the work that we do. Keep listening. And listen, do me a favor. Go ahead, open up Apple, open up Spotify, give me a review. Give me 5 stars and go ahead and type something in. I love it when I see people on Apple write in, hey, I love the podcast. Just got finished listening to this episode. Do it right now. Do me a favor. The podcast is free. You don't have to pay. All you got to do is leave me some reviews. We appreciate it. All right, look, let's get back to that Jessica. She's dropping some gems and trust me, she's really going to get into it here in the second half of this podcast episode. Let's take a listen. All right, we are back. And once again, I'm joined with Jessica Payne Parks, certified volunteer administrator. You didn't even say that. We'll get to that here in a second. I'm sure we will. But nonprofit consultant for community and volunteer engagements. Listen, she helps organizations build trust, create impact, and inspire belonging. Did it sound like I got that from your LinkedIn? Because I did, I'll be honest.
You totally did.
I did.
Thank you for checking out my LinkedIn.
And well, because that's how we met.
Was it LinkedIn or was it Instagram? I think it, one or the other.
It might have been Instagram. It might have been
just
Instagram.
For the audience, I'm on Instagram, Learn with JPP. And you can also find me on the World Wide Web, learnwithjpp.com. So, yeah.
That's true. But we're on LinkedIn. You're a LinkedIn professional, so I'm always on there. And look, but before the break, we dived right into the state of volunteerism, as well as the ins and out of volunteer management. But I know that our audience wants to know a little bit more about you, Jessica, because you share a little about who you are. But we always like a good backstory. So take me to the journey of Jessica Payne Parks. When did you know you wanted to be in that volunteer or in the volunteer management world? You know, how did you end up being in that space and transition to where you are now as a nonprofit consultant? Because I think a lot of folks on this call like the idea of being a consultant. So get in the theme. You got to give us all the good, the bad, and the uglies.
Yeah, of course. So actually, when I was younger, I didn't really know much about the nonprofit world. And my goal was to be an academic. I wanted to study freshwater algae.
Really?
Yeah. So I moved to Toronto, actually. I'm from Vancouver, which is on the west coast of Canada. And I moved to Toronto for graduate school to study algae. And 2 weeks in, I realized that I didn't want to work with algae. I wanted to work with people. So I'm really glad it happened that first 2 weeks and not like after I finished the program.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm an extrovert, always loved working with people. And before I started grad school, I actually got my first job out of my undergrad at a nonprofit. So I was a youth programmer at a neighborhood house in Vancouver. And my main responsibility was running an after-school homework program where high school students would volunteer to tutor and mentor elementary school students.
Gotcha.
Right? So I was like, okay, this is cool, but now I'm going to go like hang out with algae for the rest of my life. And of course, 2 weeks in, I was like, no, I should be working with people. So I did finish grad school. I did get my master in environmental studies, and I moved it over from like a science focus to science education. And sorry?
I said, okay. I'm following you.
So, what I thought I could do was like, okay, I'm going to write curriculum for teachers about like how to teach kids science, because like that's what I was really passionate about, right? So it's really hard to teach teachers when you don't have a teaching degree yourself and to get those jobs. So I actually applied to go back to school for another master's degree to get a teaching degree. And while I was applying for another round of graduate school, I was applying for jobs, and I actually got hired as the volunteer coordinator at World Wildlife Fund Canada. So WWF, not the wrestling, the panda.
I've heard of it. I'm familiar with them. Absolutely.
And the rest is history, really. I think through that job, I worked under a leader who was superb, and she showed me how processes and systems could get built in nonprofit and how we could use tools like research and looking at different dynamics and what people were telling us to improve their connection and their experience with the nonprofit. And at the same time, she was the one who encouraged me to do professional development. And that's when I joined TAVA, the professional association. And my second meeting, I was vice president. So, I really used that to grow my leadership skills, grow my career. Went to the Heart and Stroke Foundation, which is Canada's version of the AHA. Right. I did a short contract with Volunteer Toronto, the volunteer center here in Toronto. So, yeah, I just did different things. Again, I said, I switched jobs probably every 18 months. The longest I was with an organization was almost 3 years with the Heart and Stroke Foundation. And I did get furloughed during the pandemic. But yeah, I think it was good to get different opportunities at different organizations. And I do think I'm very lucky that, I do speak some French. So it was easier for me to get hired at national organizations in Canada, right? I live in Toronto. I have a graduate degree. I have a lot of that privilege that many people working in volunteer engagement spaces don't have. So yeah, I, worked my way. I really was looking for more strategic roles where I would be putting together strategies for organizations. And last year, so, oh, it's not last year anymore. So December 2023, I went full time with my consulting business. When I got furloughed from the Heart and Stroke, I did, a few projects. And then I continued to do some speaking while I went back full time, but I was really hooked. Like once the pandemic happened and I started doing a few projects, I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a consultant. I love, really going in and solving problems and getting the data and the results and the solutions that people can go forward and really make a difference and impact for the folks that they're serving, for the mission that they want to achieve.
Well, you know, I want to, and that's the thing, because I want to talk to you, I want to ask you a question about burnout, but I want to put that to the side for just a little bit, because I know we have a few people that are listening to this show that maybe they lead the path for their respective organizations, right? Maybe they're a COO, maybe they're an executive director, maybe they are one of those people that is the finance director, but they're also the volunteer manager, and they've been struggling in that particular respect. You know, there are a bunch of nonprofit leaders who they probably want to bring on a consultant, maybe a consultant like yourself, for example, to help with burnout, to-do lists, just general guidance, coaching, whatever the case may be. But maybe they are hesitant to write that $3,000 check, $5,000 check. Maybe they just don't know what they should be even looking for in that respect. So let me ask you this. If I'm a nonprofit leader and I'm thinking of hiring a consultant for volunteer management solutions or helping me with a talent surge or speaking engagements or anything like that, what should I be looking for in a consultant?
Well, thank you, Slim, for, you know, talking a little bit about what I do, right? So finding those solutions, I do help organizations as well hire leaders of volunteers because I have a big network and I know a lot of folks who are looking for opportunities, but I've also hired leaders of volunteers myself, and I know what to look for because I've gone to some interviews myself for, you know, like middle management positions with pretty big responsibilities. And the person sitting on the other side of that interview was like, wow, I didn't even know you could get a certification for this. I didn't even know that people did volunteer leadership as a career. Right? So here's the thing. Let me tell you a little bit about that certification, right? It's, I think...
And wait a minute. When you talk about that certification, one more time, just make it clear. What are you talking about exactly?
It's called the CVA. Okay. It stands for Certified in Volunteer Administration. So people who get the certification, we can only apply to write the exam after submitting proof that we have experience and learning.
Okay.
We've got to submit a letter of reference, and the test is pretty hard. Like, I'm not going to lie. I had to study for it, and I had, like, when I took the test, I had been working in this field for 12 years, and you still got to study, okay? And with the certification, you got to renew, I think, every 5 years through continuous professional development. You got to submit all that proof. It's just like the CPA for accountants or the CFRE for fundraisers, right? And it shows a certain level of commitment to the profession, a certain set of experience and skills.
Okay.
Now, I would encourage folks to look for this credential as well as membership and service in professional associations, right? But also recognize that it takes a lot of privilege to get those things, right? To get credentialed. Like, there was a big fee to pay for the exam. You got to take time to study. And I think we also need to recognize how credentialism and professionalism, quote unquote, really set standards that perpetuate white supremacy and colonialism. Like, how many letters do I have after my name before you take me seriously? So I'm not even going to get into that with you because I think we could have like a 5-hour conversation on that. So it's funny that, you know, on one hand, I'm talking about the CVA and how that's something that people can look for when they're looking for a consultant. On the other hand, the three volunteer engagement consultants I refer folks to when my own docket is full are Brianna Dorialis, Aaron Spink, both of which I mentioned earlier, and someone named Sue Carter Call. Now, when you look at their...
Cool. I met her not that long ago in Denver for the first time. She's very nice.
Yeah. So when you look at their work, right, they don't just come out of nowhere and say, I'm a volunteer engagement expert, right? They've studied the sector, not just, you know, through institutions. And like Sue has her PhD and she did it on volunteer engagement, but they've also done it by talking to people on the ground, the staff, the volunteers, the service users, right? The people who love volunteerism, as well as the people who hate it. They're involved in discourse with others in the sector. And they're not just liking things blindly, right? Hitting that like button every time something comes up on LinkedIn and being insidiously nice. They're really challenging people to think critically. So what I think it comes down to, Swim, when you're looking for someone to consult with your organization as a leader of volunteers or to speak at your conference, whatever it is, it's values and it's real experience.
Okay.
Right? Do their values align with your values?
Okay.
And are they just saying they're an expert? Or are they able to show that they built their expertise in different ways, right? And maybe you do want someone whose expertise is just in the international development center sector.
Yes.
Maybe you just want someone who's worked in animal welfare, or maybe you want someone with expertise like mine, which comes from across different sectors, health, education, social services, right? Again, what are your values? What are you looking for, right? And really understand, does their specialization, does what they bring, help your organization meet a specific need? And it does cost money. Like, just like paying,
flat out,
you know,
it does. It
someone
does.
On your team, don't just go with the person who's given you the lowest quote. Because let me tell you, you get what you paid for.
Listen, Jessica, you know I'm renovating my house right now. And I had... my general contractor, my bathroom is officially done. I need to put some posts on Instagram. Bathroom is done. So, you know, I had to ask around to talk to a lot of different people. And I didn't, I never even entertained the idea of going with the least expensive price. Not because it wouldn't have been bad or anything like that. Just because I know what I was really looking for, and I had the privilege, you know, to spend a little bit more. So absolutely, doing your research and really connecting. I was able to connect with my general contractor very, very well. He lives only 5 houses down from me, so that helps.
Nice.
But yes, kind of like he was what I was looking for. And so in the same breath of air that you're saying, finding someone that you're looking for, establishing some good communication with them, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah. And, you know, on that, just to, like, I'm very transparent with my pricing. Like, if you go on my website, learnwithjpp.com, you will see my pricing on there. And I want to reflect my values in that pricing. So if you are a Black-led, Indigenous-led, or volunteer-led organization, I do have sliding scale pricing for you.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask, this is not on the rundown of questions. Why do people not tell the price right up front? I know because every situation is different, but why is that?
I think people have their reasons. I think sometimes it's because they want to change their pricing regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's because they do want to offer sliding scale, but they haven't thought of how to say that to people. And sometimes it's because they want to get the most money that they can, so they're not going to advertise how much they want to charge, right? Like, different strokes for different folks.
you got to pick your lane and you got to kind of go with it. And I like the lane that you're riding in. Once again, I'm joined with Jessica Pang Parks. You can find her. We've got some good information in the show notes. She's been dropping a lot of gems. So if you scrolled forward, to this part, you need to stop right now. You need to go back from the very beginning and really listen to some of the things she's talking about here. You know, we just started 2025. Happy New Year to you, Jessica. Happy New Year, everyone, especially here. What are the key things that nonprofit leaders, not just volunteer managers?
Okay.
Because, you know, when you are a volunteer manager, you're working with EDs, financial development team. You're working with a lot of people. So, you know, what are the key things that nonprofit leaders need to keep in mind with the start of the new year, Jessica?
Okay. So one thing that I advocate for extensively, and I will keep doing this in 2025 and beyond until this misconception changes, is how volunteer impact is measured. So historically, what organizations are reporting on is, oh, we made impact this year because X number of people volunteered Y hours.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, that's really rooted in a capitalist perspective, right? Where it's like, okay, the more I produce, the more good I create. But here's an example that I got very early in my career, and it has stuck with me because back then, like, let's go back to baby Jessica, okay? Baby volunteer coordinator Jessica.
I'm trying to picture baby Jessica.
I was quite cute. Let me say that. Every month I printed out my little thing and I posted it out on the wall and was like, this is how many volunteers volunteered this month and this is how many hours they donated and I'm going to multiply this by this dollar figure and this is how much money the organization saved. Oh, so then I saw this example and I was like, whoa, I've been doing some problematic stuff. So let's say this organization does conservation work, right? They're going out, they're planting trees. Year one, they've planted 1,000 trees. There were 1,000 volunteers and 200 hours were donated. Year two, 5,000 trees were planted, but only 500 volunteers did that. And it was done in 150 hours. So if you just look at hours and numbers, it looks like year one, right, mm-hmm. where there were 1,000 mm-hmm. volunteers who spent 200 hours was way more impactful than year two.
I like what you did there.
And like maybe there's a problem, right? Volunteers aren't really engaged. The person who's leading them, they've like regressed. Something's wrong. They messed up. But if you look at the mission of the organization and the link of the outcome of volunteer involvement to impact. How many trees were planted in year two? 5,000 versus year one, where only 1,000 were. So if you cut that out of the equation completely and just report on, well, you know, our volunteers fell by 50% and they contributed 50 hours less time, it just looks like a failure when really, it's an incredible success, right? And those 500 volunteers who weren't planting trees, maybe they were doing something else. Maybe they were leading hikes to teach people about the trees, about the animals who are living in the forest, about the soil, about what the mission is all about, right? So it's so important to look at other ways to measure volunteer impact. And one of those ways is, I know we're in this society, we want to talk ROI, we want to talk numbers, we want pretty spreadsheets with little boxes and charts. We got to go back to telling stories. We got to go back to telling stories, right? So how many volunteers have learned through their service? Are you asking your volunteers those questions? Are you asking volunteers those questions about what did you learn through this service, right? How has this volunteer role lowered your anxiety or increased your confidence Or maybe you're working with people in the community. How has that impacted them? What have they learned? What changes are working with them, right? These metrics are so much harder to collect than
Yeah.
numbers and hours,
It
but
is.
way more meaningful about showcasing the real impact. So, yeah, that's what I would love folks to keep in mind. Whether you're a leader of volunteers, you're the finance director, you're the receptionist, whoever you are, please keep that in mind for 2025
I
and
love
always.
that. I really love that. I was messing with the vision board the other day, Jessica, and I'm sitting there thinking, and I'm like, 2027, 2028, do I need to have the Nonprofit Insider Podcast Conference, the nonprofit conference? Because I think you need to lead just a couple of days sessions on the relationships of capitalism and nonprofits. It's something that I don't think gets talked a lot about, to be completely honest, but we know it's something that is in the underbelly of the nonprofit space, because depending on where your money comes from, you could be subservient to whoever's writing the check. So there's a lot of aspects to that that we got to dive into. We're gonna talk about that offline. We're not gonna talk about now. There's
I
just too
like to call
much.
those uncomfortable truths. And I'll say this, Swim,
Uncomfortable
without
shoes.
getting into hours and hours of chatting with you about it, is
Truth.
a lot of us work in this volunteer, work in this sector. A lot of us work in the sector. A lot of us volunteer with nonprofits because we have this belief that it's going to be rainbows and butterflies and everybody's going to be nice and get along. And just like the Lego movie, everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team. But it's not, right? Like, there's like, and this is where I really encourage folks to look into my colleague Brianna Dorialis's work. She talks about.
Go, hold on. I want to make sure. I want you finish it. Spell her name for us, just so, because I know people are gonna, So spell it out, and then I'll let you continue.
So you can find her on the internet. Her brand name is Connecting the Cause, and her name is spelled Brianna, so with a B like Bobby, Reauna, and then D like Donald, Orelus. I hope I got that right. So she talks about power, pity, paternalism, and let's face it, white saviorism that a lot of volunteers bring to their work.
We do not have time, Jessica. That is a whole, I haven't gotten there yet. It's gonna happen, but that is a whole nother episode. Oh, I'm interrupting. Who's this interview for?
I love this conversation. I could talk about it all day. So, yeah.
I wanna kind of wrap it up. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I want to bring it to a little bit of a close
Of
here, because I
course.
know there are people who are thinking, and I think this is something that I know people are thinking, because I was thinking it. This is the type of person I want to work with. And I think there's so many aspects to the nonprofit space that are not just only relation based, but to a little bit of a degree. There's a lot of aspects of connecting with people, the idea of connecting with people you like, know, and trust. And being able to say, hey, I have some ideas or beliefs or just feelings around being in the nonprofit space, and I need to be able to share that with someone who serves as a consultant. And you really, I think, hit that on the head for a lot of people. There are a lot of people that are listening right now that are like, I think I could really work with Jessica. So I want to make sure that people get a chance to connect with you here in a little bit. But it's just the time of the interview where we do this on every episode, where we like to end with a nonprofit horror story. Now, these don't have to be horrific. Don't get crazy. But these are designed to show the more realistic aspects of being in a nonprofit space. You've done a little bit of that already. I understand you might have a story to share, perhaps.
And this is why, like, this is how I found you on Instagram, because I was like, this guy's talking about nonprofit horror stories. Oh, like, we need to get this out there. So, okay, let's go back to baby volunteer coordinator Jessica Pang Parks. I planned a volunteer appreciation party, right? Folks in my department super involved because they were working with these volunteers every day and they saw the impact, right? They had a strong understanding of what these people were contributing. Now, folks in other departments, not so much. Like, they'd come to me and they'd be like, "Hey, I got this project. Can you get volunteers to work on it?" Cool, bye, right? So we invited folks from all the departments to come to the party, mainly because a lot of the volunteers on our team, they wanted to learn more about the work that we were doing, find employment in the sector. Many of those volunteers did become employees at that organization, and they're actually still there. And they were have been there way longer than I have. But, I wasn't yet that great at showcasing their impact or advocating for volunteer value. So, like, first of all, let's kind of say, like, kind of part of where the horror comes from is, like, it was a learning experience for me, right? A lot of the stuff that people saw, it was just like it was being done invisibly by these volunteers. So fast forward to 5 p.m. on the day of the party. Party starts at 6, where, like, the volunteers are going to come in at 6. There's going to be food. There's going to be a presentation, right? So I see these colleagues from, this is, back in the day when we all went into the office every day. So I see colleagues from the other departments that are leaving the office, and my catering order had just come in for this party. So they're walking past, and I see them digging into my catering order. That was the order for the volunteer appreciation party. And I see that they're looking up at me and they're like, "Jessica, I just couldn't resist this delicious food. Oh, can't make it to the volunteer party tonight. Hope you have fun." And of course, we only ordered enough for folks who were attending. It, like, made me pretty annoyed. And, like, they didn't, like, take half of it, but I was just like, "Look, you're not coming. You clearly don't see the value of volunteers, and now you're eating the food for the people that we're appreciating tonight, and just kind of being like, oh, something to do on my way out the door." So here's the other part. That was, like, disappointing moment number one. Disappointing moment number two.
No, there's more.
The party starts, volunteers are having a good time, right? We asked the leader of the organization, the CEO, to make a speech. And I'd worked with their executive assistant of, like, "Hey, this is when they're going to make the speech. This is how long it should be, blah, blah, blah," right? So during the CEO speech, they thanked a member of the team, the only white male team member, for organizing the event. So me and the other woman who worked so hard on the event were not recognized. And they also said, "Oh, sorry, I gotta get going. I've got a really important meeting to attend." Also implying that after their 3-minute speech about how important volunteers were, that something more important was gonna take them away. So yeah, my department leader was very caring and kind. But I still look back. I clearly still look back on that volunteer appreciation party with resentment and sadness. And that was
Sadness.
one of the triggers that, really got me to be like, I gotta start advocating for my profession and the value of volunteers. Because if I don't do it and I just kind of sit back and go, like, "Oh, everything is awesome," these are the things that are going to happen.
Wow. I mean, I felt that. I can imagine there was a level of sadness, hurt, disappointment. Like it feels like that story has a little bit of everything in it. as someone who myself has, I mean, the bulk of my backdrop in the nonprofit space has been in volunteer management. We already talked about that. You and I know that.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's just one of those moments you're like, oh, I'm not going to say it's like, I don't even know, you just feel it. I actually, and you haven't told me that story before. We've shared a lot of stories. You hadn't told me that story. And yeah, I can imagine you just walked away going like, what am I doing? What is this? Am I doing the right thing? Should I be in this industry? What is happening right now? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Really? All those things.
Can I ask, did you stay at that organization much longer?
I don't think so. I can't remember exactly, but that was it. I definitely brought it up during my exit interview.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, this is like over a decade later, and I still remember this, and I still viscerally feel it. And it again is one of the reasons why I go hard on advocacy. And I didn't even have a word for it back then, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Once, I got to do a little plug here, Jessica. If you have a nonprofit horror story, be sure to reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram. You can DM me. You can always email me at you can email me the Nonprofit Insider Podcast at Gmail. We've got a lot of stories. I got an episode coming up here, probably like two or 4 weeks after this episode drops, Jessica, where people are sharing. I've been having people share stories of getting fired. And then I've got people that are sending me messages anonymously about being fired in the nonprofit space. So we're diving deeper and deeper into the realities of this world. So if you have a story, just reach out to me. Like Jessica just shared her story. We'd love to share it. Once again, join with Jessica Papang Parks. We're getting out of here, Jessica. I want to make sure that people know how to find you. You are such a light in the nonprofit space, and there's so many things that I want to be able to share that you're doing. And I want to keep up with you forever and ever. I haven't been to Toronto yet, but I'm getting my son's passport next week. He wants to go to Toronto. I asked him, I said, do you want to go to Canada? I said, do you want to go to Canada first or Mexico first? He said Canada. So I'm going to try to make that happen. So how can people reach out to you, Jessica, and the consulting work that you do?
Yeah, so my website is learnwithjpp.com. So JPP, like my initials, Jessica Pang Parks. You can also find me on YouTube and Instagram with the handle learnwithjpp. And really, the best place to connect with me, where I post my hot takes and talk about uncomfortable truths, is on LinkedIn. So Jessica Pang Parks, MESCVA. That's where you'll hear from me and where I share insights and where I repost from people that I respect in the sector as well.
Absolutely. There's so many things that didn't get added into this podcast. So when we have our summer series, that'll be another opportunity to share more insights from you, Jessica. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Swim. It was so lovely to chat with you as always. And thank you for creating this space and the nonprofit world. It's, you know, I will talk about the good, bad, and the ugly, but I want to believe in it. You know, we come to this work because we believe in it. We want to do good things and we want to find community. And thank you for creating the space for that.
You've heard it here from Jessica. And look, if you hear her name a bunch more, you know where you heard it here first. Be sure to subscribe to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. We'll see you on the next episode. We'll see you in future episodes. Take care, everyone. Yeah, you know, it's funny, Jessica, because I know a lot of people that are in a consulting space, and some of them, honestly, like, they say they've done some things, but I'm always like, I don't think your background is really what you say it is.
Yeah, so, you know what? I'm going to throw some well-deserved shade because I see someone who's like, I've got 20 years of experience as a volunteer manager. And like, yeah, maybe you do. Okay. But where's that experience from? That experience is from being a volunteer leader of volunteers. So like, right? Like you're the chapter lead, you're the district, whatever. Okay. That is cool. That is relevant experience, right? But don't come and tell me or tell people who've been working in the field for 5 years, being employed, having their livelihood depend on this work, that they should listen to you because you have all this experience. What's the context behind that experience, right?